Okay, Sakia Suzuki will be telling us about factorizations of the universal R matrix and the universal quantum invariant of frame 3 manifolds.
Thank you for the introduction. So first of all, thank you for giving me the opportunity to stay here in Montreal. I'm really enjoying math talks, discussion, walking around in this nice area. So, thank you very much again. So, in my talk, I'd like to talk about factorization of the universal R matrix and the universal quantum invariant for frames. And I hope in this 1.5 hours we can share something fun to discuss for a few weeks. So, to make it happen, I will speak slowly, carefully. And the contents is as follows. First, I will explain introduction and motivation of our research, spirit of our research, and then I will explain rather algebraic situations and geometric situation. Then I will give some. I will summarize them and state some future research open questions. So first of all, history. So maybe many of you are familiar with these kind of things. I will say something anyway. So in 1984, Jones constructed a polynomial invariant called Jones polynomial, invariant of links. And after that, a lot of invariants have been constructed called quantum invariants. And here, quantum invariants were constructed very combinatorial way using diagram and algebra for non-algebra representation things, cut and paste way. So here asked that what is three-dimensional interpretation of Jones polynomial? And we then answered to that question using Chan-Tarnow's theory in mathematical physics framework. And he constructed invariant of link in three manifolds. And after that, Reshetsky and Drive constructed the counterpart of the invariant in mathematical settings, rigorous way. So we have then quantum invariant for three manifolds. And quantum invariant in this talk, I will use for the following family of invariant. Specified representation, we can recover specifically drive invariant. And using this invariant via denser jury by a little modifying this invariant, we get LM from the conservative integral with LM invariant from the universal quantum invariant in the little drive invariant and the intersecting drive invariant. For quantum invariant for three minus.
About language, I think strictly speaking, I mean, not every identity that has six elements in it is called the hexagon. The hexagon is something else. This is the Young-Baxter equation.
So I should write six-term identity.
Okay. It doesn't matter. It's just linguistics. Yeah, but it's not this diagram. It's a different one.
Not this diagram. And for universal quantum invariant, our matrix is an element of the two tensors of Riemann-Hopf algebra, and it is called universal quantum. And that six term combination is the quantum, so called quantum Young-Baxter equation. And if we take finite dimensional representation, we can obtain this R matrix from this algebraic values R matrix. And on the other hand, let's consider invariant using triangulation. So maybe I should fix here also. But if we put some algebraic element to a tetrahedron, tetrahedron satisfies finite two three move. So here is two tetrahedra and here is two three tetrahedra. So it should satisfy five term durations. And in this settings, there are several states, some invariant, triangle invariant, which is using 6J symbol, and the quantum hyperbolic invariant, which is using quantum dial. Most of them satisfy five-term relations. And then I wondered, if there is universal things corresponding to these invariants. So what I want to do is like this.
Sorry, maybe for this quantum dialogue, that probably doesn't matter so much, but about the references. Why do you refer to that paper and not to the previous ones? About this quantum dialogue, right? Maybe whatever, Kashai for whoever, or I don't know, who, right?
Right.
Mm. Or...
Right.
Maybe,
that many quantum hyperbolic invariants, maybe they addressed that.
I'm not sure, like Kashayev, right? He had an invariant.
So the situation is like this. So here is Fleming. If we take dense order, we have closed three manifold here. And if we take a diagram, the quantum invariant using R matrix is constructed by this path. And if we take complement, we have the complement of things. And this is three manifold with boundary. And 12 below quantum hyperbolic invariant is here. Kontsevich universal invariant Carroll Jones is here. And LMO WRD is here. Then I'd like to construct this path, the quantum invariant, using the triangulation of knot complement, such that this diagram commutes, and then we can compare this construction and this construction, then you try this construction.
Sorry, you mean that the triangulation means the ideal triangulation when the knot complement k?
Yes, in this talk, yes, ideal triangulation.
Sure.
So this is the introduction, so are there any questions or comments?
Some tests, it's not in my powers.
Okay. And then they want to continue doing tests?
It seems so.
Oh.
Sorry.
So the multiplication is the distance according to this. multiplication is like multiplication of tensor is like this. But during the level, there is additional things like this. So I'm writing this as evaluation.
Just to make sure, so this is now not the Hopf algebra, right?
Hopf algebra.
The Heisenberg double? The Heisenberg double?
I mean, the double is not Hopf algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite direction of the thing, and then we first read alpha. So if we put all, like alpha tensor beta and R inverse alpha bar tensor beta bar, then we meet alpha bar here, and then beta 1, 1 and 2 is, there are two R matrices, so I make indices 1 and 2, beta 2, and alpha 2, beta bar, and then gamma alpha 1, gamma beta 2, and then coming back to the base point. So the invariant is in the derivative double in this case. If there is n component, then the invariant is the A tensor n. And the reconstruction is like that. So first, we duplicate the diagram. And one of we want to distinguish those two strands, so we make it thick, one of them, we make one of them thick. Then, corresponding to one crossing, there appears four crossings. And basically, we put S tensors in each crossings. And here, additional rule, if the strand is thick, then we apply anti-code. So, as Anton, yeah.
What about the guts and caps?
Right, so that's a good point. Now we have only cup and cap running from right to left. So I hide it.
Okay.
So
that's fine.
Yeah, the cap and cup makes things complicated. So I would be
avoid.
And then so yeah, as Anton asked me. This gamma is not antipode of Heisenberg double, because Heisenberg double is not Hopf algebra. This doesn't make sense in H. But we only consider now S tensor. This is this element. And here is the basis. Here comes the dual basis. And in each basis, we apply antipode of the original Hopf algebra. Actually, this is the same. Because one of two strands is the unique derivative doubles antipode was original antipode. And if the strand is oriented upward, we apply antipode again. If the thick strand is oriented upward, we apply antipode twice. Then, as exactly in the same way, we read this element from this base point, going around to the opposite orientation, and then this is so this is this case of S inverse, and this is strand is going to down, so this is alpha bar, beta, alpha, beta bar, like this. And there are two components appears in this case. And we take B, so this product is now took in Heisenberg double. So what, So first component is in Heisenberg double. The second component, the product is opposite. And here's an important theorem by Kashaev. Said that a Dirichlet double can be embedded to Heisenberg double tensor Heisenberg double opposite. Sorry, this is A. He constructed this embedding completely and also showed that the R matrix of the tensor in Dirichlet double, the image is factorized by four S tensors. And these four S tensors, if the leg is in the opposite algebra, we apply antipode. So for example, S14, one is in here, but four is in opposite, so S14 is one tensor gamma S and legs is 1 and 4. On 1 and 4. And why I said this is in construction is this theorem. Let L the n component with base point, then this value is equal to the image of Kashaev rendering of the original invariant. So this is just algebraic side of the reconstruction of universal quantum invariant. So what does this diagram mean then? So we will see the meaning of this diagram in the next slide. So first I want to explain the octahedral decomposition of link that are associated to ring diagram. So we take ring diagram. Then using this diagram we can obtain ideal triangulation of the complement of the link in S3 minus 2 points. And then we glue them like this. With this octahedral, we take two vertices opposite and the rule is to at plus infinity, and rule these vertices together. And the opposite to the other two vertices, we glue them at minus inverse, and attach them the edge together. So we do that at the all crossings, and then the boundary of one octahedra is four leaves like this. And we glue this octahedra attaching boundary along the strand. So there are two leaves on each strand. Not on each strand, each edge of the diagram. So we attach all of them together. Then we have ideal triangulation of knots link complement. So I want to make a relationship between this and the construction, the diagram, this. But here, we need more additional information because this octahedral decomposition is topological one, and if it itself, we don't know how, so yeah, I will explain the next thread. Tetrahedra can have a vector field associated to this number. And in these settings, this tetrahedron is represented by a crossing. And the order is, there is up to two kind of orders, up to rotations, this one and this one. And the other one is represented by negative crossings. Benedetti and Petronio showed that so represent crossed string manifold. We put sphere from crossed string manifold and take it manifold as with boundary and consider the spine only. So there should be the boundary condition of n graph if we represent closed string manifold. And so I will call that nice n graph, and they constructed local relations by which gives a closed string manifold, topological closed string manifold using the n graph. And they also gave the relationship set, relation set of for forming closed ring manifold. And if we put 0 or 1 colored on here, we can represent frame string manifold with n graphs. Universal quantum invariant from link diagram to if it's not the case, it goes to the field W. The link diagram can be seen as a n graph. If it can be seen as n graph, and so duplicate procedure is from link to n graph. Then if we consider this map, this diagram in n graph, then it's nothing but the octahedral decomposition plus plus branching information on that. So in the image, we constructed the map corresponding to the universal quantum invariant. And here is Kasha-F embeddings. Then the question is, which relationship is J is invariant on? So what is J prime on n graph? For the first Hopf algebra, if the first Hopf algebra is involutely, then J prime is invariant of a closed three manifold. So J prime is invariant under the relation set of closed three manifold of n graph. Yeah, this is joint work with Glashma. But for general A, the closed three manifold is too strong. Too strong means too weak. Yeah, relation is too strong. So this means J prime could catch more information than topology. J prime could catch geometry. So I should have said that in this image we constructed J prime, but we can easily extend this J prime to the map from n graph. That was the point. So then we wonder what is J prime, and we wonder the relationship between this universal quantum invariant on n graph and the Cooper-Bell invariant or triangular invariant quantum hyperbolic invariant. But we didn't success to construct some invariant from this. This is just not so. Before to compare. So I'm going to end in 2 minutes, so it's really fast, but today yeah, there are three books. I mean, yesterday there is night thing. After this is part, so it could be maybe it's better. I don't know. Well, we can discuss then after talk. So this is the first diagram. So we constructed this parse for the universal quantum invariant, and we want to extend it to the invariant of three manifold. But for involutely Hopf algebra, we could do that. But for Hopf algebra, which is not involutely, we need some additional information, geometry, and we are now working and we don't know the solution yet. So the future research open problem is to extend the universal quantum invariant to an invariant of three manifold with some geometry information framing, coming, spin, I don't know yet. And I wonder if there is similar framework for Concevich integral. So Concevich integral, there is an associator, there is an element satisfying five-term relation which is associator. So it could be nice if we reconstruct Concevich integral using this path, and that coincide with the universality is coincide with the construction of universal quantum invariant for this lupus. And then we want to compare these blue passes here. And the last one is a slight different framework. Quantum group is studied. One motivation is R matrix to study what was R matrix to study quantum groups. R matrix or crystal basis or but R matrix was one of the motivation quantum group was studied and made progress. But Heisenberg level, so now we have five-term relation and we have so link invariant from that algebraic object. So this five-term relation is looks important as well as R matrix. But the representation theory of Heisenberg level is not studying much more than quantum groups. So I wonder, we want to study the Heisenberg level version of quantum groups representation theory.
Thank you very much.
Yes. So, do you have a Heisenberg double at the level of Lie algebras or Lie bi-algebras? Classical.
How is it in the semi-simple case? I don't quite remember, but how is it? Isn't it algebra? The Drinfeld double, isn't it isomorphic to the Heisenberg double? Isn't it algebra? Let's say if you take a semi-simple case, isn't there something like that? Because if that's the case, then probably you can say that the representation theory to some extent is studied, right? You just take representations of the Drinfeld double and, well, you apply some twist, I think, by the longest vial element of the vial group or whatever. You should probably lift it to some quantum vial group or something. I'm not sure, just to because I looked at it very long ago, but I kind of just to know.
But for SL2, it's not true.
Why?
Yeah, so what I know is the finite dimensional representation of UHSL2 cannot extend to the Heisenberg level.
In what sense extend?
In my sense, is there is the embedding aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So we can consider the quantum groups as a subgroup of the Heisenberg double.
Mm-hmm.
But on that subgroup, we have finite dimensional representation. Mm-hmm. But that cannot extend to the whole of the algebra.
But does it contradict to what I said?
No.
Maybe not. Mm-hmm. Well.
I explained what I.
Mm-hmm.
But the Heisenberg double of the world is the Heisenberg algebra.
Mm-hmm.
That does not mean.
What
does it mean? Well, Heisenberg algebra is not finite dimensional.
No, it's more, I think it's probably more complicated. It has several, whatever. Let's say at least geometrically there would be different leaves. I don't think it's a Heisenberg algebra. It would be more complicated.
If I understand properly, in the case of not confidence, you can prove that it is an invariant. Is that so?
Yes.
And also not confidence in three manifolds.
I didn't say that.
Only in the sphere.
Yes.
And when you check the invariants, I guess you have to check the invariants under Mathieu-Pepelini moves. Two, three moves.
Invariant only.
Oh, for link components, for not components.
Yes, there are two ways. One is because that is the image of the original one, and one is we can check directly the two. Yeah. So if we take two different diagrams, we have two n graphs. And these are related by finite geometry and some randomized two things.
Mm-hmm. And so the curiosity was among those. So these are moves for branched spans, right? Or
right.
Branched vertices.
Yeah.
Among these moves, there are actually two kinds of moves. Those which preserve the multiple class of the convings and those which do not. In the proof of invariance, do you see these two different cases, or the proof is completely the same?
Sorry, could you explain again?
So, in these two, three moves, there are two types of moves, actually, because you have to take into account the branching.
Mm-hmm.
There are the moves which do not change the multiple class of the vector field, and there are those which do change the multiple class.
Mm-hmm.
In the proof of invariance, do you see a difference in these two cases, or is it just the same proof?
So what we proved is not invariant under finite 2-3 moves. Just so. So, the
Do you have some kind of ribbon element in the Heisenberg sequence? Do you have framing or branching change?
The frame. We don't have natural group like element, body mode element in Heisenberg.
Further questions? So let's thank Zakia once again.